Dr. Ken Mullis on your right, Elizabeth Doss on your left,
or Doss,
and we're glad you're here, and you're calm, collective, and you don't have to worry about anything. These people, I've preached to them for years, they've never bit me one time.
All right, I think I'm on, and talking to make sure here. So, we're going to start in, just jump right into something here, but before we do, I want to say a couple of things, and Elizabeth didn't have to have my permission, but she certainly has my permission, because when I talk, she may jump in, and that's okay. She can interrupt me anytime she wants. She and I have talked a lot. I'm excited about what Elizabeth's doing and really the knowledge that she's gained, and I don't run into too many people when I talk to them that I'm real comfortable with them. I'm real skeptical because there's so much false information out about nutrition. But as Elizabeth and I talked, and I think she was skeptical of me, but we found out we really are pretty much on the same plane. So we're in unity up here, and we hope we'll end up with some unity out there. This is not medical advice. We're not certified nutritionists. We don't expect you to believe necessarily everything we say. But I've done a lot of reading. I went for a year and a half, probably every night read something. I tried to find research articles that were not funded by food companies. I tried to find stuff out of medical colleges and National Institutes of Health and things like that because, go ahead and throw up the first picture. Oh, there I am. There, look at the three Bubbas. And that was me at my heaviest. And I couldn't lose weight. I didn't know how to lose weight. And really, my first thing was to lose weight. I mean, I wasn't really thinking about healthy nutrition. But as I've gotten into it, and don't you think that's So you know, it's really from a healthy nutrition standpoint. And I'll show you some other pictures later on. But that's me and Margaret down in South Georgia, in front of a cotton field on the farm. And that's a little bit different. Body shape there, and really, when I look at a dog and I'm looking at its nutrition, I grade it on a scale of 9, and I'm grading its body shape because that's how we tell about its nutrition. And literally, I went through 6 months where I didn't lose any weight, but my body shape changed because I was eating differently, so I thought that was interesting. So that's sort of a little bit of my testimony. I'm going to let Elizabeth jump in here and tell you a little bit about how she got interested in it and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I have kind of a similar start. I wanted to lose weight, and I had a friend came to me, and she was starting something called Whole30, and it's like a basic elimination diet. No sugar, nothing processed, no grains. We'll get into more of that, but basically meats and fruits and vegetables. No dairy, no beans. And I learned so much through that, and mainly what it feels like to live without sugar and how good I felt. I remember calling Mom and just being like, I didn't wake up foggy, I feel awake, this life is amazing. And so that kind of happened alongside with a lot of my family members getting sick, and cancer, and autoimmune diseases, and different issues, and so I started digging and researching, and you know, Jacob's my sounding board for, is this actual information or is this just a blog of opinion? And so you know, went through that, and then I did that for a month. It's called Whole30, 30 days, and it's something just for 30 days. It's not, you know, a lifestyle. It's just to see how your body reacts to food, and it's really, for me, it was an instrument to learn how to read labels and to learn about food. But Ken and I were talking that I lost almost 15 pounds doing that before I even started exercising. And my body changed a lot. Really, I was really excited about losing weight, but it was so much to do with how I felt every day. Not just the emotional side of confidence, just the physical side of just, man, I just felt like a different person. So and then a combination of that and I started meeting with Joey and got a lot of the encouragement for momentum building and exercising, and learned some really awesome principles with that. And that in combination kind of steered my life in a different direction for the better. And I was then had a baking company that I was trying to promote and make pastries, and now I'm a completely different path of healthy meals that nourish people and give them a better life, because I couldn't, you know, with a sound mind give people muffins and cookies and all of this stuff when I'm like, don't do that, that'll make you feel worse, you know. So it's really been a year of constant learning and evolving and just being open. And, you know, it's not all about sugar-free, gluten-free, like all these labels. It's about basics and science, what you have to offer.
Yeah. So everybody have one of these pieces of paper? So go down to the bottom. I'm going to ask you, before I even read up the part, we're going to jump down to the bottom. And there's five questions. We're going to answer these as a group by just raising your hand for true or raising your hand for false. So now there's three macronutrients, and they're listed at the top. Don't worry about what they are right now. You can look at them if you want to. But let's answer these questions. Number one, all three of the macronutrient groups are essential. We must eat some of each category to have a balanced diet. Everybody thinks that's true, raise your hand. Everybody thinks it's false, raise your hand. Okay? So number two, in order to lose weight, we must eat less food. The only way to lose weight is to decrease the number of calories we consume. True? Raise your hand. True? False? Okay. Y'all are doing pretty good. So exercise will cause us to lose weight by burning calories. True? Raise your hands. False? Raise your hands. Okay. Eating fat from animals, saturated fats, will cause us to gain weight. Everybody thinks that's true? Raise your hands. False? Raise your hands. Good. So eating red meat and eggs will raise your cholesterol and cause heart disease. Everybody thinks that's true? Raise your hands. Everybody thinks it's false? Raise your hands. Okay, y'all did pretty good on that test. So, you know, about 50 years ago or 60 or whatever it was years ago, whenever Dwight D. Eisenhower was president, he had a heart attack. And there were competing groups of people who started, scientists, some doctors, some weren't, that started talking about what caused heart attacks. And so the thought process that won out was low fat, you know, not eating red meat, not eating, you know, animal fats. And so for the last 50 or 60 or however many years it's been, the government gave out advice. Now we got political advice on how to eat. And in that length of time, diabetes, type 2 diabetes, has skyrocketed. You know, all the metabolic diseases, obesity, you know, the belly fat gaining like I had in my first picture up there. Everything, high blood pressure, heart disease, all of those things have skyrocketed. And, you know, medicine's come a long way, and the doctors keep us from dying, but they don't keep us from getting the disease. We, the way we eat causes the disease. Now, the doctors will get us out. We'll have a heart attack, and they'll save our lives. So mortality has actually gone down a little bit, but the morbidity, which is, means that the numbers of incidence of the overall disease has just gone up and up and up and up. Thank goodness for the doctors, because if they hadn't done what they'd done, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about this today. And I do have Dr. Hitson on call, so here, if we have any general medical questions, he's willing to answer them. But if you have a specific medical question, you need to check with your doctor. And if anything we say here conflicts with anything your doctor's told you, go talk to your doctor. Okay, I'm not giving out, I'm not telling you, but for the majority of people, this advice will hold pretty true. So all those are false, to at least to a level. And we can hand out the paper that actually answers the questions. Who's got that one? Bjorn? No, it's one Bjorn had, I think. So we're gonna talk, and we're gonna really center our discussion. And let's go ahead and put up the first first slide there, because you know, so if Jesus tried to feed the 5,000 today, I can't eat that. I'm a vegan. He's trying to feed them fish and bread, right? He says, has that fish been tested for mercury? And the other person says, is that bread gluten-free? We have quite a range of ideas about our nutrition, and Jesus wasn't apparently faced with those exact same questions. He was faced with a lot of other very deep questions, but not those questions. What's the next slide there? So that's Noah's Ark there, and it says down at the bottom, well, so much for the unicorns, but from now on all carnivores will be confined to sea deck. Y'all wondered what happened to the unicorns, didn't you? Well, and the point of that is that some people eat some ways and some people eat the other ways, and you know, we just need to be respectful, let people be in their categories and eat. I'm not a plant-based person. I'm not a vegan, and I don't recommend eating totally vegan. But I have friends that are and do, and I'm okay with them. It's okay to eat the way you choose to eat. I'm going to talk a little bit, and we're going to talk a little bit about what we think is the healthiest way, and that we're going to find the areas that we can absolutely agree on, whether you're vegan, vegetarian, or whether you're like me, and I'm pretty much a carnivore. But we're going to talk about areas that we can agree on that will improve your health. And I think, what's the next slide there? So as we go through our dietary things, trying to figure out who's right and who's wrong about diets, what really is, you know, we talk about things like Mediterranean diet, paleo. You know, you got two people in a cave there, and one says 1 teaspoon Celtic sea salt, 1/4 cup blanched almond flour, 1 tablespoon coconut flour, coconut oil, 1/4 cup unpasteurized honey. Another one says, this paleo diet is harder than it looks. You know, so what really is a paleo diet, and where did it come from, and what, you know, so we can look at all those things, but the bottom line is, if we understand the three basic macronutrient food groups, first one is carbohydrates, the second one is fats, and the third is protein. Now, of those three, most of you raised your hand and said that of all three macronutrient groups are essential. We must eat some of each category to have a balanced diet. And most of you raised your hands that was false. So which of those three groups, or 1, 2, or 3, or all of them, which ones are not essential? And by way of definition, an essential nutrient or an essential ingredient is one that the body needs. Body's got to have it, but it can't make it on its own. It must be eaten or consumed in order for the body to thrive, or your body will eventually fail. It won't fail immediately, but it will fail. So of those three, how many think that carbohydrates are essential and the body can't make them? Raise your hands. How many of you think that fats are essential? Okay, how many thinks protein's essential? Okay, only one of those three groups is non-essential, and that's carbohydrates. The fact is that the body can make glucose out of protein through a process called gluconeogenesis. And it mainly happens in the liver, but it can happen in the intestinal tract and some other places as well. But you could go your whole life and not eat a single carbohydrate and thrive and survive just fine. I haven't eaten any significant carbohydrates in at least 8 months. That's just me. No, most people are not going to do what I do. I understand that.
Yeah, my first question was, what about fruit?
Yeah, when Elizabeth and I were talking, she said, what about fruit? I said, well, eat them if you want to. And you know, here's the thing.
But I also believed that I needed the fiber.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true.
Yep. So we were talking, and Elizabeth said, well, what am I going to do about fiber? Well, fiber is a carbohydrate. It's down here. It says cellulose is the fiber of plants. It's very long chains of glucose molecules held together in tight chemical bonds, and it even gives wood its strength. So if fiber is not an essential nutrient, do we really need fiber? Everybody thinks you need fiber, raise your hands.
I said yes, by the way, to that answer. You do need fiber, and that is not true.
So let me tell you what fiber will, we've already talked about it. You go back to work. I'm not talking to you anymore, Jeanette. So the thing about fiber is that if you eat sugars, like you eat an apple, for example, and you eat the whole apple, the fiber in that apple will slow down the absorption of the sugar into your system. But it won't stop the absorption of the sugar. You're still going to absorb all the sugar. You're just not going to get a blast of it.
So it's better to eat an apple than drink apple juice.
Yes. It's better to eat an apple than to drink the apple juice. Shouldn't be feeding your children, in my opinion, apple juice. Rot their teeth. So, and there's all kinds of sugars. There's a whole bunch of sugars. And the government has done us a wonderful service by allowing a product called high fructose corn syrup to come into our food chain. And so high fructose corn syrup is on a scale where you look at sugar, table sugar here, and then work up the scale. High fructose corn syrup is at the very tippy top as far as the sweetness when you taste it. So you would think that if you would eat just put a little bit of the high fructose corn syrup in something, then that would be enough. But the food companies don't do that. They put a bunch of it in there. It's in everything. It's in hot dogs. There's only two brands of hot dogs you can go buy that don't have high fructose corn syrup in it. They have sugar in them. And yet it's not an essential ingredient. You know, we've said that. It's not an essential ingredient. You can go for the rest of your life and never eat any of those carbohydrates. So somebody said, well, what about fiber then? Why don't we eat fiber? Because that's supposed to help you not have colon cancer, right? And it's supposed to help your system move through faster.
I was about to say, I grew up knowing that, you eat fiber, so you go to the bathroom. That's just, that's what I believed.
Yeah. Our government told us that. It's a political thing for sure. They told us. The reality is that the theory was this, that if you ate undigestible fibers, that they would move faster through your GI tract and not leave things in there to irritate you and cause colon cancer. The problem is that every single study, not some studies, every single study that they've done has shown that fiber slows down the GI tract. Every single study, none of it speeds it up. So fiber is highly overrated, Dr. Bliss, and you can consume it if you want to. I mean, I eat a half apple a week or so. Margaret and I'll split an apple. It's not like I don't eat any carbohydrates, but I don't eat very many. And even the fruits that we have now are genetically grown so that the apples are bigger and sweeter and have more sugar in them. There's starting to be a little bit of a theme here, Elizabeth. Something about sugar. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think about sugar?
Well, some people think I'm crazy when I say this, but a lot of the research that I did on sugar had to do with cancer and the rate in which glucose feeds cancer tumors and the dramatic results of chemo mixed with eliminating glucose from your diet and how that the rapid rate of the chemo working because you're also feeding your body stuff to help fight it instead of sugar, which combats that and makes it grow. So I personally eliminated sugar. I had some fruit sugars, whole fruit sugars, doing Whole30, and I couldn't believe the way that I felt. I feel great when I don't eat wheat as well. Different things make. I felt great not eating dairy for a long time too, but the way that I felt and the clarity of mind that I had without sugar was enough to jar me, honestly. And I talked about it to everybody I could come in contact with. I did. I mean, Kitty and I were exercising together at the time and just talking about it because it. I don't know. I used to wake up every day feeling kind of groggy, almost like I had just the start of a cold every morning. Does that make sense? Never fully awake. And when you start a diet like that, your body goes through shock when you completely withdraw it from sugar. So
especially if you do it all at once. That would be the shock. Yeah.
It's quite painful, actually. I had a headache for a few days. But once I completely weaned off of sugar, I sound like an addict. Well, I guess I was technically. But day seven, I was like, I'm going to go run. And I didn't run. I couldn't run at that point. I don't know the science behind all of that like you do, but I know that it changed my world and how I feel. And That's not to say that I don't have things in my life that have sugar in them. And
you said you had friends that went to the doctor because they had cancer issues and what?
Oh my gosh, yes. Well, first of all, I have three friends. Well, I say friends, they're acquaintances of mine that I got to talk to through a group called the Swell Society that a girlfriend and I like kind of started to talk about healthy eating. And they're all under 33 years old, by the way, and women, breast cancer, cervical cancer, and all of these things. And she had 8 months to live, and under 33, two young kids, and went to the doctor. First thing her doctor said was, stop eating sugar. Stop eating sugar.
So right she now. Went to the oncologist.
Yes.
And the oncologist told her to stop eating sugar.
Yeah. And she was like, all I could think about, other than okay, was, wait, why wasn't I told just not to eat sugar before? Why is it now that I have cancer that somebody's saying, don't eat sugar, like the first thing, you know? And she also, along with having a doctor, had a nutritionist that also said,
So here's the thing about sugar. If there's one thing, I'll tell you the number one and number two things, the one thing that is the most inflammatory thing that you can put in your body is sugar. Number two is wheat. Processed wheat, corn, rice, those are, they're on down the list, and those are not all that great either. But sugar does a multitude of things in your body. As soon as you eat, now, and when I say sugar, I'm a general category because there's all different kinds of sugars, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time telling you what each sugar does to the body. I'm going to, if anybody's really interested, come see me, and Margaret will tell you. I'll talk to you for hours about it. But basically, sugars cause an insulin response. Fructose doesn't. We'll get into that later, but it does worse things to you. But sugars cause an insulin response. And this is the other thing Elizabeth and I were talking about. When she started on her whole 30, she lost 15 pounds without exercising, because hormones ultimately control your weight. And when you eat sugar, insulin is a hormone, and it spikes up. And that insulin is necessary for fat to move out of your bloodstream and into fat cells. As long as there's insulin there, then fat will move out of your bloodstream and into fat cells. And so in order for that fat to come out of the cell, insulin has to be at a very low level. If you're constantly eating sugar, and your insulin levels are constantly spiking up and spiking up and spiking up and spiking up, you can exercise all you want, but if you're eating all those carbohydrate sugars and you're keeping your insulin levels up, the body will not have a key to pull that fat out of that cell and get rid of that fat. And that's why that one answer is false. Exercising is good. Let me just tell you.
It's vital for me.
It's vital for me too. I'm not belittling exercise, but I am telling you that you do not have to exercise to lose weight. If you have significant weight to lose, or you know somebody who does, and they say, well, and I get this all the time, well, I can't exercise. I can't do it. I have this disease. I have that. I have arthritis. You don't have to exercise to lose weight, but you do have to reduce your insulin levels somehow. Now, if you have other hormone issues, thyroid levels, cortisone problems, even estrogen, different things. If you have those issues, you need to talk to your doctor, because those interfere with weight loss. So I'm not just talking about weight loss. I'm talking about your overall health. Even if you don't lose weight, if you stopped eating sugar, you would be healthier. Even if you don't lose weight. If you don't lose weight, when you'd reduce the sugars down and reduce the wheat and all that sort of thing, you get those out of your diet. If you don't lose weight, you need to find a doctor that can work with you, because there's a reason for it. If everything is normal and in a balance in your body, and you get rid of the carbohydrates, your weight will come off. My son Ben, how long have you been with me? 2 months? He's been back in Griffin 2 months. And how many total pounds? 15 pounds, and he just went and bought a new belt because his pants are falling off. So if everything's normal and you start eating this way, not only will you lose weight, but you might even put on muscle. When I was a kid, when I was in high school, I loved to play touch football. I was raised in Valdosta most of my life. Man, we played touch football every Sunday afternoon, and I was fast. I tell you, I'm still 63 years old. I probably still outrace most of y'all here. I was pretty fast when I was in high school, and we'd play, and I loved it. The reason I exercised is because I loved to do it. And that's the way we need to think about exercise, right, Joey? We need to get if we go into a gym and struggle and get really, really sore and just feel terrible, are we going to go back to the gym and do that again? No. So what we need to do is, as our weight comes down or as we build muscle, we need to find things that are fun that we like to do. You like to run, right?
I didn't before. Oh. I had to learn that. I have a little bit of a different, not opinion, but story as far as exercise. But I agree that you don't have to exercise initially to lose weight if you're reducing your sugars. But for me, it was key in how I felt as well. I lost more weight, obviously, exercising. And I did get discouraged, and I was sore. And that's where Joey really helped me to get past that point to continue. And my favorite thing that I got from Joey was momentum, building momentum. And I apply that to every area of my life. Everything requires you to build momentum. And so for me, they go hand
in
hand.
Even in your way of eating,
because,
right? Momentum
absolutely.
In the way you eat. Yeah.
And I was telling Bjorn this the other day, if I'm not eating well, then I don't want to exercise. If I'm exercising, you better believe I'm not eating bread and I'm not eating sugar, because I want them to go seamlessly together. And I'm not going to feel good if I'm running 3 miles but then eating cake. You know what I'm saying? Like, yep. It just doesn't go together. And what I was telling Bjorn is, what I found is, personally, that momentum building in my physical life and the momentum just with nutrition and just opening my knowledge as well helped my spiritual life and my body emotionally. I mean, I think emotionally I'm different on sugar and not on sugar, but I mean, think
Don't
about
hang
kids
around
that
her
eat sugar.
When she's on sugar.
But it's a real thing. But
I believe you.
I feel like I couldn't. Not that I couldn't, that I didn't flourish into my spiritual gifts and callings until all of it was aligned. When I'm not having to think about how much I weigh or what clothes I'm wearing or if I'm doing this or that and worrying about my physical health or how bad I feel because I just ate this, then I'm more in tune with what God's calling me to do that day.
Yeah.
And I'm more in focus. And so when I'm eating well and exercising, I feel like I am so in tune with spirits consistently to live a full life. And that's not just eating well. That's eating well, exercising, and seeking Him all together. But I just...
And you feel better, right?
I didn't know what that felt like full circle. I had pieces of those little things, but man, when you do them together. Hey, yeah. It just beeped. I got all my steps in today. Don't know how. I guess
there's a tremendous industry out there with Fitbits, and I don't know what watch she's got or whatever she gets her steps in. But isn't that funny? I mean, Margaret and I, it was her birthday yesterday, and we were out and about and shopping down in the Macon area, and Margaret's daddy said, "What are those things?" Now, he's 84 years old. I said, "Those are Fitbits and one thing and another." I said, "They keep up with the number of steps." And he's walking with a cane. He said, "They keep up with the number of steps." How many could I get in a day, you know?
It's a mighty encourager, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, the whole thing is awesome. There's a whole industry about that's developed and that to motivate us to keep moving. There's nothing, I'm not saying there's anything wrong. I exercise. I rode 24 miles on my bicycle last night. First 20 miles, I was okay. The last 4 miles, I was like, man, did I outkick my coverage. I was wiped out because I got a little dehydrated. But I pushed it and I got through. Because I remember what Joey said. Joey told me, he said, the mind will give up before the body does. And I said, well, my mind had already given up, but I pressed through. But the point about exercising is do it when you feel like doing it. Mm-hmm. As you get in better shape and as you get in better health, then go exercise. The other thing I want to tell you about, I want to tell you two things real quick, sugar and insulin. So sugar is, I said it was inflammatory. And here's, I'm going to give you a little bit of a visual to think about. I'm going to take sandpaper, and let me get one of these tattoos off here with my sandpaper. So I'm gonna take sandpaper and I'm gonna rub David's tattoo with sandpaper because I'm gonna get that tattoo off of there. Well, it didn't quite come off that day, so the next day I come back and I take my little piece of sandpaper and I rub that again. Now it's starting to get a little sore, David. And it's getting into the raw place, but I don't like that, and I'm going to get it off. So I'm running, and I'm rubbing every day. I go back for 30 days, and I rub that with sandpaper, and David's dumb enough to let me do it. So I'm rubbing it, and will that ever heal as long as I keep rubbing it with sandpaper? I probably won't get the tattoo off either, will I, David? Okay, so but now as I do that, now I've done it a second month, and the body's trying to heal that. So it's sending in all these cells, and it's trying to get, now maybe there's some bacteria in there, and it's getting infection, and the body, and it's getting thicker, and it's starting to fester up, and David's saying, don't come back and see me anymore with that sandpaper. So David got mad at me, and I quit rubbing it with sandpaper. What do you think's going to happen? Is it going to heal? Probably going to heal. This is what we're doing to the inside of our blood vessels. We're eating all this sugar, and it's inflammatory. And we're causing all this inflammation in our blood vessels. Now, how many blood vessels do we have in the body? At least six. 600,000, who knows? I don't know. I'm just saying that to make a point that whether it's in your toe or whether it's in your heart, blood vessels are everywhere. If there's inflammation in your heart blood vessels, do you think there's inflammation in your brain blood vessels? Do you think there's inflammation in your toe blood vessels? Why is it that diabetics sometimes lose a foot? I was back at a 40th year anniversary, and one of my classmates was in a wheelchair, had a prosthesis on her leg. She's diabetic. She just lost her foot. Why? Because two things. Number one, sugar is inflammatory. As your blood sugar stays up, it irritates the inside of your blood vessel. But it also, diabetics have to take what? Insulin. And the more insulin they take, usually the more weight they gain, and it slows down healing. Insulin inhibits healing. So sugar is inflammatory, creates damage, and insulin slows down healing. That's why their leg won't heal. They get a sore, and it just won't heal, and it just won't heal, and it just won't heal. That's also why diabetics usually don't die from diabetes. They usually die from cardiovascular disease, heart attack, or some secondary cardiovascular disease, because it's inflammatory in those blood vessels. It's not just diabetics, though. There are at least estimated 8 million undiagnosed diabetics walking around that don't know they have it because their blood sugar levels stay up just high enough to create problems in their body, but not high enough to create so many signs that they're going to go to Dr. Hitson and say, man, I've been drinking a lot of water and going to the bathroom a lot, and I've lost weight. At that point in time, now he's got to try to get you stabilized and get everything calmed down. And now, you know, and if you don't do what he says, you're going to end up with very significant disease. So the point is, carbohydrates are not essential, number one. Number two is, they're inflammatory. And they are what creates the weight gain that you're going to, you know, that you're going to experience. If we walk out here tonight, and you want to be healthier, because I know some people really don't care. They really don't. If you're smoking cigarettes, and I tell you, if you quit smoking that cigarette, you'll be healthier. Did you tell them that last week? Think you did. If you quit smoking those cigarettes, you'll be healthier. How many people just say, oh, yeah, by the way, yeah, I'll just throw that away? Because they're addicted to the cigarettes and they like them. Well, I can't tell you the number of people I say, hey, you know, if you'll get rid of that carbohydrate, you'll get better. And they say, but I like them. That's what they say. Even diabetics that know. And here's a statistic that shocked me when I first saw it. I didn't believe it. You're not going to believe this when I tell you. 90%, 9 out of 10 type 2 diabetics can be reversed. Why do we have so many diabetics then? And this wasn't my statistic. This was a researcher doctor statistic. 9 out of 10 type 2 diabetics. Now, if you're type 1 as a child and you just don't make any insulin at all, you're in a whole different category. But most diabetics, isn't that right? Most are type 2. So most diabetics are type 2, and 9 out of 10 of those can be reversed. Some can get completely off of insulin. I don't know about you, but I'm just crazy enough to think that if that would extend my life and make me feel better and healthier, I would probably try to do that. So insulin is inflammatory. It causes weight gain. It's what moves fat into cells. Insulin doesn't get present, doesn't rise in levels until the body tells it to, and the body tells it to when you overfeed it the carbohydrates.
Yeah, back to momentum really fast. When you go without eating sugar for a certain amount of time, you want sugar less. And the same in reverse. The more you eat sugar, the more your body will tell you you have to have sugar.
That's right.
Some say it's as addictive as addicting as cocaine or another drug. You know, I think that's pretty apparent in our world. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was very difficult for me to get off of it. And because of the way I did it, as I was reading and looking at the articles and everything, I actually did it a little bit slower over a period of time. I told one young lady, she was going her way to the doctor. She was going to pay a doctor. And I knew this young lady had two children. She was a single mom. And I knew she didn't have any money to go to the doctor. And I was worried about it. I said, "What's wrong?" She said, "Well, I'm just going to try to find out a way to lose weight." And I said, "Darling, save your money. I'll write down on a piece of paper. And I'm going to give you all a piece of paper. Before we go out here, yeah, you can hand it out now. It's right there, of what you can eat and what you can't eat. And if you stick to this, you'll lose weight." She lost 20 pounds in a month, just eating off this list right here. Now, here's the key to that. So that was on a Thursday. I left the office. I didn't come back till Tuesday. When I came back, she was like, "I got deathly ill while you were gone. I thought I was going to die. They've tested me for everything from lupus to whatever. And I'm going, "You ate exactly like I told you to eat, didn't you?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "You got what they call the keto flu." I said, "You're fine. All your tests are going to come back negative. You're going to be okay. You're going to live. But if you stop eating those carbohydrates just like that, your body's going to revolt. You'll feel like you got the flu. You'll want to think you got to go to bed and die. Some people get it really bad. I didn't, but some people can't quit without quitting cold turkey. So you'll have to choose your poison, I guess. But this list, a couple things I'm going to tell you about this list. Number one is that list. The first part of the list says eat anything, as much as you want off of this group of foods. It's basically animal proteins. You do not have to go hungry to lose weight. There was one guy that tested this theory. He ate 4,000 calories a day for a month, eating just off of that list, and he didn't gain a pound.
Nor do you have to count calories.
Thank you. Nor do you have to count calories. If you're hungry, eat off that list. Don't eat the things that are on the don't eat list. And there's a list of starchy vegetables that says eat these sometimes. So if you want a baked potato every once in a while, have a small baked potato. But the thing about it is, if you go eat French fries, you're not just eating potatoes, you're eating the vegetable oils that it was cooked in.
Hydrogenated oils.
And they're very high in omega-6 fatty acids. So you go, I went to this seminar, and it was really a veterinary seminar, but they were talking about nutrition. And the guy was wanting to sell us these big bottles of omega-3 fatty acids because it was necessary to feed the dogs these omega-3 fatty acids in order to balance out the omega-6 fatty acids that they were eating, which are bad. Now, omega-6 fatty acids all metabolize into inflammatory components. Omega-3 fatty acids all metabolize into anti-inflammatory components. So you get enough of the omega-3s to balance out the omega-6s. And I asked a question. I said, "Why don't we just stop feeding them omega-6 fatty acids? Why don't we just take the vegetable oils and everything out of the foods?" They said, "We can't make them do that. People won't do it." And I said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, number one is cost." He said, "We can put these vegetable oils in there cheaper than we can put animal fats in there."
This is a great segue for my soapbox currently, which is butter is a great thing. A lot of people think that butter is Blue Bonnet and parquet. It is not.
Not.
And it is so bad for you. So bad for you. And I thought, I remember being like, I mean, tiny, like not even 10 years old. And I remember like our family switched from that to real butter again. I don't know how old I was, but I remember that moment in life. But growing up and being older, I thought everybody knew that they weren't good for you and that it was like when Eisenhower had the, not Eisenhower.
Eisenhower had a heart attack.
Yeah. And people said cholesterol is bad and it was really the cholesterol that were restoring the cell, all that stuff. I thought that people knew that and people don't know that. And That's huge, because it is so bad for you to eat hydrogenated oils. Google it. But butter is good for you. Butter is natural, and it is healthy, and those fats are good for you. If you're lactose intolerant, ghee is an awesome, awesome thing. It's just clarified butter, butter without the dairy and water. So,
Elizabeth has a list. I want to get done. We got about 8 minutes or so, and I want to wrap up a couple things and give Elizabeth some time to tell you how she seasons food and makes it, even though you're not eating different things over and over, you're eating things that taste good over and over. So I want to touch on protein real quick. Protein is essential for the body. You've got to have it. And the body can digest animal-based proteins much easier than it can digest plant-based proteins. That's all, pretty much all I'm going to say about that. Fats are essential. Essential. You cannot metabolize fats by eating something else. You've got to eat fats. The hydrogenated oils, the vegetable oils, all of those. And now, olive oil and coconut oil are okay. They're fruit. They're fats out of fruits. Avocados, the oils you get out of that, are okay. But your corn oil, safflower oil, soybean, don't eat anything soybean ever. Just get rid of the soybeans. Yeah, don't eat soybean oil. Those are things. There's hormones in that that drive your system crazy. So just think about animal-based protein, animal-based fats. The average person cannot increase their cholesterol by eating cholesterol-containing foods anywhere with any significant levels at all. The average person cannot decrease their cholesterol in their blood by not eating those foods. So eating eggs or not eating eggs, eating red meat or not eating red meat will make no difference in your overall total cholesterol values in most people to any significant level at all.
What is it you were telling me about dairy companies when the Eisenhower thing was happening?
Well, the very first, you remember the four basic food groups? How many people are old enough to remember the four basic food groups? That was our first government thing. That was actually put in place by the dairy industry. They had their own category. You know, and when you start having certain things in certain categories, they got their own category. Start looking to see who funded it, who spent the money. And then we have the food pyramid, and the food pyramid is basically upside down. It needs to be turned over. And it's slowly, slowly, slowly changing. There were some new recommendations that came out in 2015, and those are getting incorporated, where they've taken out the thing about red meat rising your cholesterol and that sort of thing. They're gradually taking those things out, but the news media are not necessarily picking it up that fast. The brain is mostly composed of fats. They did a study on a group of vegan children that were fed only vegetables, and every one of them was significantly deficient in vitamin B12, because you can't get vitamin B12 out of vegetables. You've got to supplement. That's why they enrich bread, and bread is enriched with vitamin B12, and they have to put it in there because they're not going to get it otherwise. And when they these children were underdeveloped, brains were underdeveloped, and they were lagging behind their peers in their ability to learn. And so they started supplementing them with vitamin B12, and it took them months and years to catch up. Eating animal-based protein will provide that vitamin B12, and it'll provide the fats necessary for that brain development. Get rid of the carbohydrates, increase the animal-based proteins and fats. I'm convinced that most Americans are hypoproteinemic, that they don't have enough protein, muscle protein built up in their body. And that affects your immune system, your ability to fight off colds and all that sort of thing. Jason, if you don't mind, I'm going to show you a series of pictures. These are real people. I'm in a Facebook group, and I'm not going to tell you the names or anything like that. This person right here is a young lady. She's not young anymore. She's 45. That top left picture was when she was 21. She was overweight, and she decided she was going to lose weight. So she started, she did Weight Watchers, and she did some other things, and she lost down to this right, on the one on the right, and she's 35 there. So she held pretty good till she was 35, but she couldn't get past a certain level. Then you go down those bottom three. The bottom left one was when she first started, where she dramatically increased the amount of animal protein in her diet, and dramatically she got rid of all the carbohydrates and basically ate fats and meats and that sort of thing. And she started on the left. And the one on the right is when she's 45 years old, and you can see the muscle definition there, and the fat's gone. And so, and that's a real person. Go to the next slide. This is a young man who was a vegan, and you know, and so he, what he did was he switched over to a, I mean, he was skinny, he was weak, he just felt bad all the time, and I know he's got a goofy hat on there, on the right one, but that's the way he looked 1 month after starting eating animal proteins, and that's 3 months later, you can see the muscle definition already starting to form there. And I don't have a six pack. I tell Margaret I have now. I never have had a six pack, but now I got a two pack, one here and one here. So go on to the next one. This is a lady, and she's in her mid 40s, I think, and that's after 2 years on coming off of eating the standard American diet. It's called the SAD or SAD diet, standard American diet, and she's eating basically mostly animal proteins and fats, and very few, if any, carbohydrates, and that's the way she looks now. Go to the next slide. There's another one. And the next slide. And that guy was very proud of himself. And the next guy is an MD from Texas. He's a retired MD. He doesn't work anymore. But he and his partner, after he lost that weight and got a little muscle definition, came in second in doubles tennis in the whole state of Texas. And so, and you can see it's just a dramatic difference. The body shape's different, and a lot of these people don't work out. They don't go to the gym. Every picture that I showed you are people that don't go to a gym. They don't work out. They do things like tennis. They do things that are fun. They do things they like. Some of these ladies have children, and they just chase their children around when they're younger, and that's all the exercise they got. But you can do it with And if you combine that with exercise like Elizabeth and I do, then you start, I mean, I'm going to be 64 in April. If somebody told me 10 years ago I'd be riding a bicycle 24 miles with a cycling group, I'd tell them they're crazy. I mean, I was already starting to get tired when I was 50, but David and I were on the slopes of Utah. We skied three resorts. We skied 5 days straight. We had never done that before, had we? It used to be we skied 3 days. We were toast. We were just done. We skied 5 days. We could have skied another day. We could have. We didn't, you know, our wives wouldn't let us stay that long, but we could have skied another day.
You keep saying not working out, but I call, like, anything I do physical working out, yeah. So you keep throwing me off because I'm like.
So what I'm talking about is, like, pumping iron, doing the things that we think about going to a gym to do. I do interval training on an elliptical, and I ride bicycle, and that's pretty much what I do. I ski. I do water sports. I don't go to a gym. I don't pump iron. I don't. I guess you can tell, but you know, and I'm in better shape than most 64-year-olds that I hang around, and I attribute that. I've had my bicycle for 3 years. I really couldn't do what I could do until after I lost the weight. When I lost 35 pounds, I remember riding bicycle up a hill and thinking how easy it was, and then I thought, well, I left two bowling balls back at the house worth of weight is what I did. But also I'm healthier. My cardiovascular system's better. My blood vessels are better. They've healed. And, you know, why do skinny people have heart attacks? Because they're eating all that sugar. Just because you're skinny don't mean you're not eating a lot of sugar. You can be skinny and consume. I didn't gain weight until I was in my 40s. I could eat anything I want. I was a donut connoisseur. I could tell you where all the donut shops were, what different flavors I liked. I could do that. And I could still do that if I wanted to, but I choose not to, because when you get to be 60, you start thinking about your mortality. So, Elizabeth, you got anything else you want to do on your thing?
Some.
I guess you want him to pop that slide up?
Yeah, you can do that. So most of you here know that I went to culinary school, and I love food. I love all kinds of food. I love donuts, too. And Mom and Dad both cook super well, and so I grew up with really flavorful foods and all the foods. So the transition for me, it was vital that I kept a flavorful life, and that's part of, like, my business practice is that I want to provide flavorful foods for people, with it being clean and whole foods and super nutritious. And this is just a list of stuff that I just don't live without. This is stuff that Jacob, when I first started buying, was like, why do we always have this sitting here? Why do we? And I'm just like, you don't know that I put that in everything? Because he doesn't cook. But these are just staple ingredients. And I say ingredients because these things don't have ingredient lists, because they are just a whole ingredient. And it just it's a way to make just, I'll get into it, but really good food. So the first one is butter or ghee. Ghee is just butter, clarified butter without the dairy and water in it. So the reason for butter is because it flavors meats, it flavors vegetables, you can saute. I'm not a huge fan of raw kale unless it's in a smoothie, but man, if you put some butter in a pan and lemon juice, it's the bomb. So garlic, if any of you have ever gotten food from me, I like garlic a lot. Always garlic. Garlic is really good for you as well, and it's very nutrient dense, and it's just delicious. So garlic is something I keep on hand because it can make eating kale, spinach, broccoli, steak, chicken, fish. There's only so many foods that are good for you and whole foods that you rotate in your diet if you're trying to stick to predominantly meats and vegetables. So lemons, I say if I was stranded on an island, when people ask you that question, what would you take? Lemons, because I love lemons in water, in food. I put it in my kale with olive oil and butter and salt, and it's just amazing. Lemon chicken, I mean, just there's endless possibilities for citrus, but especially lemon. And salt, my papa.
That's my favorite, salt.
My papa Jeff, all growing up, Elizabeth, don't put salt. But I just do, and it's good. And I found ways to find, like, healthier salts. I haven't done a whole lot of extensive research in it, but I don't use iodized table salt, I'll tell you that. I use either sea salt or Himalayan pink salt. And I love it. And I'm a salt person. But you can make food taste good. It's amazing how many people, Ike, one of our good, y'all know Ike, friends, he'll come over and he'll be like, why does this taste so good? Why does your chicken taste good? I'm like, dude, I put salt on it. I put more salt than you would think, you know. So salt, powerful. Olive oil and coconut oil are huge, 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 huge in flavor. And making your food taste good, you know. For me, I don't want everything to taste like olive oil, so I'll cook my meat in olive oil, and then I'll cook my vegetables in ghee or something like that to change it up, so not everything tastes like coconut oil all the time or everything tastes like butter. You have variety. And then lastly is fresh herbs and spices, and I cannot scream this enough because I love Italian food so much, and I love French food, and I love Asian, I love all food, but Asian food. And if you hang out with David and I enough, you'll know that we both just put all the spices and all the herbs on everything, because you can, I mean, if you want, we'll just say you have a chicken breast. If you want Italian food, fresh basil, fresh oregano, parsley, garlic, and it's Italian. If you want French food, fresh thyme, lemon, olive oil, butter, French. You know, if you want Spanish, Mexican food, cumin, cilantro, you know what I'm saying? Asian food, fresh ginger, fresh garlic, and allspice. Like, you have a variety so you can maintain. Like, for me, when I first started this journey, the reason I wanted to discover, like, foods that were well-seasoned and can transition this way with just a few ingredients is because I don't want to give up the things that I love. I mean, it's hard enough not eating bread and butter every day, to be honest. I mean, it's difficult. And so to not have my staples of Mexican food, or, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to live a life without those things. And so to be able to do those healthily with herbs and spices is huge, huge, huge for me. Yeah.
So just one last thing and then turn it over to you and pray for people. But we're going to let you pray. So I asked Betsy if I could say something before, but David and I really started down this journey. I got really interested in it when I was able to lose a little bit of weight, and then I sort of drew him in. And doctors are really, 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 really busy. And it's not like he can sit around and read about nutrition all the time, because he has a lot of patients, a lot of diseases he's got to work on. But he was kind to me as his friend and let me use him as a sounding board. And so we did a lot of discussing of this, and we sort of went on this journey together. And he told you last time he weighs less now than when he graduated from high school, I think, and we're both in better shape. But Betsy told me when we were talking that since she's increased the protein in her diet, she's seen hair grow back in, a spot in her hair and her eyebrows. She says, I've got eyebrows I didn't have before. So I mean, and I asked her if I could say that. But and that's a common theme that I've heard from people who have increased the animal protein in their diet, is they've seen things. You know, some people say that they've had like infections to heal and toenail fungus is not. I don't know at all that's true, but I do know that the protein will not hurt you if you're a normal person with normal kidney function, all that. If you have a problem, talk to your doctor, you know. But, and I'm not telling everybody to do everything, but I can tell you, if you increase the amount of animal protein in your diet, the amount of animal fats in your diet, and decrease the amount of sugars and carbohydrates in your diet, you'll feel better. And maybe not initially when you go through the keto flu, but you'll feel better. Your body will rejuvenate. I'll say this last thing. If you're going to weigh yourself one time. Put that scale up for 30 days. Put it up. Measure yourself. Measure around your arms. Measure around your waist. Measure around your chest, your thighs. Write those measurements down and put them up for 30 days. Your goal is to get healthy. Think of it that way. My goal is to get healthy, not to lose weight, not to gain weight, but to get healthy. If you get healthy, those numbers will change, and you'll see it in 30 days. And if you don't see any change at all in the weight, you're probably going to see changes in the numbers of where you measure. And if you don't, I would suggest you go see your doctor, because there's probably a reason. It's either hormone imbalance or something, and I can't help you there because I'm a dog doctor, not a person doctor.
I also want to say really fast. Oh,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
All right. I have a reprogram here.
Okay.
What if you have high cholesterol and high blood pressure?
If you don't mind talking to this.
I was just saying, having to reprogram thinking of over 45 years here, what if you have high cholesterol and high blood pressure?
Okay.
How is this diet going to affect that?
Okay, so I don't have time, and I would love to talk to you one-on-one if you want to, but I'll tell everybody this in answer to that question, is that your cholesterol numbers will improve, absolutely, if you just get rid of the carbohydrates. It's your cholesterol is not driven by the animal fats, the animal protein, all that. That's totally been misproven now.
That goes back to the Eisenhower thing of people saw in the microscope that it was cholesterol and said, yeah. Oh, that's the problem.
When they first did the pathology studies, they saw cholesterol crystals in the arteries, and so they just postulated that it was cholesterol that was causing the problem. Cholesterol is, every cell in the body can make its own cholesterol. The body pretty much produces all the cholesterol it needs. What's the function of cholesterol? Cholesterol is necessary for your cells to maintain and heal themselves. You've got to have cholesterol.
It fights the sugars.
Yeah. Now, if you've had a heart attack, you need to be on a statin. They've been proven to help after a heart attack. Before that, if you get rid of the carbohydrates, you're probably not going to need the statin, okay? Your blood pressure will come down. My blood pressure had gotten to the point where Dr. Hitson looked at me and said, a little bit more tick, and we may have to put you on some medicine. The last time I was in, my numbers were back down to normal. And I can tell you that my cholesterol ratios are, it's time for me to go. I did them last year. It's time, this time of year I do it. But the last time when we did it, my cholesterol numbers, and you can really look at the ratios, because you're looking at the high density and the low density and all that, and there's some ratios that they developed that you can look at on those, pristine. One number is 3.5. When you divide it out, my number's 3.5. It's right on. Another number, you divide these two numbers, and it's supposed to be less than 2.5, and mine was 0.67. I mean, and all I've eaten is animal protein. So the answer, short answer to your question is, if you... And this is my takeaway. It's on the bottom of that one sheet. If you don't do anything else but walk out of here and quit eating sugar and quit eating wheat, if that's all you do, you will improve your cholesterol numbers, you will improve your health, you will decrease the inflammation in your body, you'll feel better, ultimately. And I'm telling you, and spiritually even, I mean, I can't tell you. I've been over a few months, I've met with Ralph some, and I'm trying to write some things for him and one thing and another. I'm the most positive person. I mean, I think it's half my diet, really. I'm pretty positive now. That I can't always say that through my whole life that I've been that positive. But y'all have put up with me all these years till I finally arrived.
I know we're running tight on time, but really fast. I just want to say that this – process, I'm still not good at. I live about an 80-20 percentage in my life with eating this way. But it's not. It wasn't easy for me. It was 100% a discipline, which is ironically my word for this year, discipline. But that and exercise and in my spiritual walk, all it's been a season of, it's enacting a discipline and walking it out. It's a choice, and it's really here. And that's something that Joey also helped me work a lot through, because I don't particularly, even though I enjoy running now and the successes of that, I don't ever say, rarely do I say, I'm just really ready for a run. I'm generally like, okay, I have to get up and I have to run, and then I feel better. So I say that to encourage you that it's not always the easiest decision. It's not always the easiest to choose this at all.
Especially if you're addicted to the sugar.
Yeah, and so the reason I bring that up is I lived a long time, and I still have to catch myself consistently saying, oh, I messed up today. Oh, tomorrow I'm going to do this. And that is not a fun life to live. And something else Joey taught me and my mother, that you have a decision every second of every day, and that don't wait for tomorrow. Like, don't. Just choose in that moment to make a better decision. And that to me is just huge, because that is encouragement, and encouragement is what gets me to live this life in a healthy habit, good way.
A year or so ago, Margaret was out of town. She was down visiting her parents, and I was in the grocery store, and I walked down the candy aisle, and they got these big, these gigantic M&Ms now. And I walked past them, and then I walked back, and I looked at them. I picked up a bag, and I went home, and I sat there, and I ate some of those M&Ms while she was out of town, because she couldn't catch me, right? Well, I dropped one on the sofa, and it crushes onto my pants, and I don't know it. But I confessed before she actually accused me. The next day, I said, she got home. I said, Margaret, I've sinned. I'm so sorry. I ate M&Ms, but I saved some for you. And so she said, where are they? And I told her, and we finished off the bag together. But she said, I wondered what that blue thing was with chocolate smushed on your pants. And I said, well, I would have gotten caught.
Dark chocolate in moderation.
Okay. I would have gotten caught anyway. Marcia, but since then, I've not had any candy since that time. Because if you fall off the wagon, the point is, you don't have to stay off the wagon. You can jump back on. That's true with your Christianity as well. You know, if something happens, you sin. And I told Margaret, I've sinned. I'm sorry, baby, I've sinned. But if you've truly sinned, that's the beauty of the forgiveness of Christianity. Forgive yourself if you do something like that. Put your food up, then go on down the next day. It doesn't mean that you got to start over a number of days counting that you're off of carbohydrates. You're still the number of days you ever were. You just fell off the wagon one time. It's not that big of a deal. It's not that big of a deal.
Miss Linda has a question.
Does somebody else have a question? They are, and when I made this list up, I was making it up in the sense, and those are on the sometimes list, right? Yeah, and you can eat the starchy vegetables sometimes, but even Elizabeth was telling me that she read somewhere where those block absorption, if you eat certain beans or something, that it blocks absorption.
Yeah, well, just that, not that those things are bad for you, but generally they don't add anything. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm sure they'd have some nutritional value.
Yeah.
Thank you. But what I had read is that for the purposes of Whole30, eliminating them was because if eaten with leafy greens, that they absorb the nutrients of the leafy greens. Therefore, eating the leafy greens does nothing for you in that moment.
Okay.
So it was like singularly eating them would be the best thing. But so I'm not a bean eater. I can't.
You can eat all the leafy greens you want, but I'm going to tell you, you're not going to get any nutrition out of them. How many people eat lettuce? You think you're getting nutrition out of that? You really do not. The fact is that all that cellulose in there blocks absorption. There's iron in certain vegetables, but it's non-heme iron. Heme iron is in meats. I'm just telling you, increase the animal protein. You can eat all those green leafy. You can eat all the broccoli you want. You can eat all the asparagus you want, but you need to increase the animal proteins in your diet. Or if you're a vegan, you've got to start supplementing, and you've got to supplement like crazy. That's a whole different ball game, and I'm not going to get into that tonight. If you want an easy way, eat all you want. You won't be hungry. Joey and I had this discussion. He said, what do you mean eat all you want? I said, you can eat all the broccoli you want. You think you can get fat eating broccoli? Eat all you want. Just stuff it down. Just keep putting it down. You're not going to be able to gain weight eating broccoli, but you're also not going to be able to gain weight if your system's normal, your hormones are normal, eating red meat, eating chicken, eating fish, eating turkey. Eat all you want. You can eat all you want. Eat until you are full.
Of high quality, by the way.
We're going way over time. Okay, so her question is, how do you not have the keto flu if you do come off the carbohydrates? Suffer for 2 or 3 days if you want to do it cold turkey. If you can gradually decrease your carbohydrates, which is what I did, then you won't suffer the keto flu. But if you stop suddenly, and some people can't do it gradually because the cravings come back and it makes them go. It's like Elizabeth was saying, you eat a little sugar and you want more. If you can't do that, you got,
it's
basically
mental.
Cold turkey, and it just it's muscle aches and pains and feeling bad for 2 days, maybe three, and then you're over it.
Well, so just get like with me, it's just a headache.
Yeah, Ben just got a headache.
I mean, you might feel a little foggy, and you want to go to bed early for 2 or 3 days, but the keto flu symptoms I think are
fairly unusual.
Frequent.
Yeah.
This was 10 years ago. I had lost 40 pounds doing Atkins, and this was before even Dad thought I was crazy when I was doing it back then. He's, you know, people just, it wasn't mainstream then to do this protein thing. And of course, once I went back to eating normal over the years, the weight came back. And so since I've been back, and I've been eating with them, and it's definitely starting to come back. I only lost 4 pounds the first month, but I went down a full pant size. But that first 2 or 3 days, all it was just a bad headache. Yeah. For me, and that's when I did Atkins. That's when I started this again. There was no aches and pains. There was, yes, it does happen to some people, like the lady that he works with, but that's not a routine thing.
So the key is, this has to be a permanent change. It has to be a way of life. A new, they call it on the Facebook groups, they call it a WOE, which means way of eating. And your old way of eating has to change to your new way of eating. And if you do Atkins, and I think Atkins had it as close as anybody almost, but if you do Atkins and then quit doing Atkins, what happens? You gain all the weight back, and you're not healthy. So, all right, we're wrapping up. One more thing.
But I had two girlfriends who had very, very bad thyroid issues that ate this way. A little more fruits than what we're talking about was what they were doing as well, but predominantly meats and leafy greens, not a lot of starchy vegetables, and both had no soy as well, was huge in the thyroid thing, but got off their medicine completely. So it's pretty awesome.